This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We're expecting a high temperature of 62 degrees today with some sunshine and also some patchy clouds and cool weather with a low of 41 overnight tonight.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Joan Doniger.
Cisco, happy surprises have sent two of Wall Street's three main averages to record territory above the closing highs they set late last summer. Right now, the Dow is up 166 points, but it's still about 150 points away from a new record. The Nasdaq, however, is up 99 to 8114, and that is good enough for a record. The S&P up 25 to 2933, also a few points above its closing high. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index gaining 0.2%, thanks to the almost 12% boost in Anixter shares after its earnings report. It is the earnings reports from companies such as Twitter, Coca-Cola, and Hasbro that are fueling the gains. Twitter shares are up around 15.5%. User growth surprised analysts by beating targets easily. Hasbro shares up 16%. It saw both profits and sales rise last quarter, even though it warned things would look weak because it's still recovering from the loss of Toys R Us. Coca-Cola sold especially well in China. That's a key measure of Coke sales last quarter rise 2%, and its shares are up about that much as well. Back to you, Chris and Cisco.
And on today's Noon Business Hour, Amazon, we're going to be reporting on another new plan from that company. And also, Allegiant Air has another place to go.
Travel Tuesday, a double dose. We will talk about Allegiant Air, but also travel rewards, how to make sure you're getting the most out of them. Also, more cars. Talk about putting cameras in the car to stay focused on you, the driver. Is that going to become the norm? All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Kohl's and Amazon are upping their partnership. We're going to cover that in our next segment. Right now, the report on sales of new homes is leading today's data. We are joining Brian Wickert, president and owner of Acunet Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And Brian is also a sponsor here on WBBM. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Brian. Tell us what you have learned.
All right. Well, you know, housing starts and housing sales, and particularly the starts, which is the most important thing to look at, were down on a seasonally adjusted basis. And here's what matters. Let's talk about the Midwest and Chicago, because there is really no such thing as a national housing market. So in the Midwest, according to the Census Bureau, housing starts were down a whopping 41% in March of 2018. If you're looking at buying stock in a Midwest home builder, maybe that's an important number to know. Let's boil this down to Chicago. According to a survey by a firm called Metro Study, annual home starts in the entire Chicago metro area totaled just 6,364 units for the entire year in 2018. That compares to 114,000 existing home sales. So you can tell by that contrast, new home sales and starts in Chicago are just really a pimple on the overall residential real estate landscape here in Chicagoland.
And we're also talking about, the economy in the Chicago area at large.
Well, the economy is doing great, but here's another interesting thing. When we look at that larger portion of the residential real estate landscape, the existing home sales, those numbers are also just out for March. Nationwide, they're down 5.4%. However, you really got to dig in to your local market. Nobody wakes up and says, hey, I'm going to buy a house somewhere in the United States of America, right? They don't even say, I'm going to buy a house somewhere in the Nine County Chicago area. They drill down and say, you know, I want to buy a $500,000 or an $800,000 house in Winnetka. And so if you look at the numbers from the Illinois Association of Realtors, home sales, existing home sales in the Nine County metro area were down 10% in March, So that's almost double the national drop in home sales. For the first 3 months of the year, they're down 8%. Took the average seller 52 days to get from the listing to closing, which is exactly the same as last year. The bright spot for home shoppers in Chicagoland is that inventory is about 2% higher than a year ago in March. So that means there is currently a four-month supply of homes available for sale, and that is considered a balanced market.
Now, it seems like, at least over the last couple of reports, there's been a difference in existing home sales versus new home sales. What do you make of that? What might drive a consumer, someone who wants a home, what might drive them to one or the other?
Well, for one thing, there are sure, at least let's just talk in Chicago, there are a ton more existing homes available for sale. And, you know, part of the problem we have in Chicago and up in the Milwaukee area where we're headquartered is we are missing half of our metropolitan area compared to a place like Dallas. It's called Lake Michigan. And so you can't build east of downtown. Right. So there is an extreme shortage of land. And remember, when you go to build right now, there's a shortage of land. There's the expense of getting the legal permits of doing that. And then there's also a short supply of labor and lumber and all the other building and materials. So people are finding right now that it's an expensive proposition to buy new construction. Existing, yeah, you might not get exactly what you want, but it's going to be a much more economically efficient purchase.
Now, rates have been historic lows for a long time now. But as you're interacting with people, talking with them about maybe getting a mortgage or a refi, is the fact that they have ticked up, even though they're still historically low, is the fact that they've ticked up, is that giving some people pause, maybe psychologically? It just feels like a house is more expensive?
Absolutely not. And the reason is that buying a house is not really an economic decision for the most part. It's a family situation, right? You buy a house because you're starting a family or you're downsizing. You buy a house because you're getting married. We're seeing a ton of millennial first-time home buyers. And so whether the rate is 4%, which is where it was 3 weeks ago when we had the very nice dip, right now it's at 4.25%. If you're willing to pay 0.5% on a 30-year fixed rate loan in the Chicago area, that doesn't make any difference to the home shopper. If you want to buy a house, that quarter point difference doesn't matter. Now, back in late 2018, right in December, we were tickling 5%. Well, maybe then you start to get a little resistance. But at these levels, which are expected to remain level for the rest of 2019, no impediment whatsoever for home buying.
Brian Wickert, thanks. Always good to have you on the show. Brian is president and owner of AccuNet Mortgage. Coming up, Kohl's expands its partnership with Amazon. It's an effort to get more people into the stores.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Starting in July, Kohl's is going to accept Amazon returns at all of its stores across the country. Let's learn more about the partnership from Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, welcome back to the program. So what is in this for both Kohl's and Amazon? Why is this a good deal for them?
Well, Kohl's likes it because it brings more traffic in their stores, and they get a lot of those people dropping off in the store, also shopping in their store. And they haven't said too much about exactly how positive it is for the stores that ran the test, about 100 stores. But we do know that their business was better and their traffic was better than stores that didn't run the test. What does Amazon get out of it is it makes it easier for Amazon's customers because it's inconvenient when the package gets to your house to have to send it back to Amazon. If you happen to be a Kohl's customer and you go there anyway, it's really easy for you to therefore drop off the package. And Kohl's has also made it very easy inside the store. They've got a designated line just to drop off Amazon packages. So it works well for both players. And, you know, it's sort of like sleeping with the enemy. On the other hand, if you're getting more traffic and more sales, the fact that you're helping Amazon is not so bad. And if you're Amazon, the fact that you can make returns easier, even though that customer is also buying stuff out of a brick-and-mortar store when they make the return, is also a positive view. So they've reached some sort of agreement that says, okay, we both like it well enough to do it in 1,100 stores, not just the 100 we tested it in.
Now, you mentioned kind of sleeping with the enemy. Is there a chance that there ends up being a bigger partnership here? I mean, is Kohl's, it makes sense for Amazon maybe to take over Kohl's?
Well, you know, they first agreed to take returns, then they agreed to sell Amazon product in their stores. I've been describing this as the third date. And so, yes, I expect something more to happen. And I keep thinking of it as they need more places to sell product. If you're Amazon, the 400 Whole Foods stores is not enough. Those 1,100 Kohl's stores seem ideal to me. They're off mall. They're convenient. You could set up drive-thrus if you wanted to in most of them. And so when I look at that, I say, this could just be something that leads down the path to the next acquisition that Amazon does in the brick-and-mortar space. People have speculated on Kohl's. People have speculated on Target. They both sort of make sense. None of us speculated on Whole Foods, and that's what they bought. But my betting is that if they want to get serious in the apparel and accessories business, and if they want to have an opportunity to use stores as distribution centers, because we know that Kohl's has about 20,000 extra square feet in every store, then they make a lot of sense to me. And so I've been saying for the last 3 years, I thought this might happen as an acquisition someday. I don't know. I'm still just guessing.
And now it's becoming the future.
Clearly, Amazon needs brick-and-mortar space for the future.
What do you see? What do you forecast for the next step?
Well, I think this will just, you know, they'll roll out this. There'll be 1,100 stores doing this program now, and so they'll see how that works. Kohl's is also going through right now and putting some alternative businesses inside of their boxes that are too big, but they'll have a lot of boxes that they haven't done anything with, so I'm sure Amazon will get a feel for how all that works. And then the question is, does it lead to a marriage, or do they just keep doing some kind of a deal together?
Still on the third date.
Yeah, we'll see if they get a fourth, huh? Jan Rogers Niffin, always good analysis. Jan is CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, exposing the myths of travel rewards. And Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's take a look at the markets now. It was sponsored by Walter E. Smith Furniture. Here's Joan Doniger.
Chris, investors have been expecting an overall drop in profits year to year among S&P 500 companies by the time this earnings season is over. So some better than predicted results are sending the S&P and NASDAQ beyond their record closes set late last summer. The Dow is up 159 points, but the NASDAQ is up 100 to 81.15. The S&P up 26 to 29.33. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining 1.2%. Anixter shares are leading those gains, up 11.5% on its own earnings report. Now on Wall Street, Twitter flew in the face of analysts and shares are now flying some 15% higher after it posted a surprise increase in monthly users while its campaign to clean up fake accounts continued to draw advertisers. The results may be drawing investors. They also drew a tweet from President Trump, who used the site to claim without evidence that Twitter is biased against Republicans. Now let's check in with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal. Kurt?
Well, good afternoon, Joan. Grain markets are mostly lower as we move through the noon hour. A short-term drier forecast and commodity fund sellings kept corn and bean values under pressure. There's also concern about African swine fever and that the U.S.-Chinese trade deal would be too late to help old crop grain demand. Corn down 2 to 2.5 cents a bushel. Soybeans 12 to 13 cents lower, while the wheat market's up 1 to 3 cents. This is Kurt Kimmel, Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thanks, Kurt. The Dow up 158 points with business at 25 and 55. Live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, Joan Doniger, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are flying high today. We'll see what's elevating the markets.
Travel Tuesday also, making sure that you get all you can from travel reward programs.
A Nevada-based discount airline sets its sights on Mexico.
More vehicles are being equipped with exterior and interior cameras. We'll discuss what they're looking for.
A boil order is in effect for the village of Northbrook because of water pressure problems. On Wall Street, the Dow up 156 points. The NASDAQ is up 99. The S&P is up 25.
And on the markets, the Dow Industrials are up 158 points. The S&P up about 25. and the NASDAQ up by 100 points.
We have more sunshine heading into Chicagoland as the afternoon goes along, getting up to our high of 62, slowly getting there right now. 51 O'Hare, 52 Midway, 52 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. The noon business hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Las Vegas-based discount carrier Allegiant Air is going international. Let's get the very latest with Joe Sweeterman. He's professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Joe. What's the story?
Well, this is the big news. Allegiant Air is one of the three ultra-low-cost carriers, with Frontier and Spirit being the others. And their growth has slowed down a little bit in the last few years as they've, cherry-picked most of the good markets. But they're coming out of the box big with an application to go to Mexico. So there's a lot of speculation of what this may mean.
What do you think it means?
Well, we're pretty sure they're going to get rights to go there. And knowing Allegiant, they'll probably focus on, say, Cancun, the beach resorts. But they come in, these are really profitable markets for the big airlines, American, Delta, and United. So when Allegiant comes in, they tend to push prices low. Well, they often go just, maybe 2 or 3 days a week. So we'll see if their business model works down there.
Now, is there anything that some of those bigger airlines can do to justify the higher prices? I mean, is the service better, more reliable, or are you getting more on the flight?
That's a great question. I think they've kind of found a 1-2 punch. The first is, they offer basic economy now, where we can take it cheap, but no carry-on bag on most of the big airlines. No advanced seat assignment. You may be in the middle of seat. No freaking flyer points to speak of. They also have, of course, the just periodic air sales. Well, they'll put fares on sale, so people that really want a cheap fare get it. But those that are, not quite as price conscious will pay a little bit more. And that's helped neutralize these carriers a bit. So they're tending to go more to niche markets now, where they don't have to keep, head-to-head competition with the big guys.
Yeah, and so that you can go to Cabo San Lucas, for the weekend.
That's right. And, in our region, Allegiant flies from, say, South Bend Airport and Rockford and places like that. And we'll see here, though, to Mexico. It's just such a big market. They may just set up shop right next to the big carriers.
Joe Sweeterman, thanks for the analysis. Joe is professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul here in Chicago. Markets are surging today. Let's find out what's going on. We're joined by Matt Shapiro, president of MWS Capital here in Chicago. Matt may even have a few records set here today. What do you make of what's going on?
Well, Cisco, it's just that good news is breaking out, and the market seems unstoppable. Would you believe we're up 25% from the bottom reached before Christmas, which, it's great to see. It makes you wonder, what were people thinking? But of course, a lot has changed. The Fed is on the sidelines. Earnings are much better than expected. Today, amazing profit beats from lots of different companies, Coca-Cola, Verizon, Lockheed Martin, across the board. Earnings strength has been very good. So instead of earnings being down this quarter year over year, they're going to eke out, say, a 5% gain. So investors are just celebrating. And thanks for having me on. All-time highs, would you believe it?
Yeah, well, and we'll talk more about some of those specific earnings in just a moment. But what do you make of the fact that during that dip, you had a lot of analysts with the sky is falling, this is the end of the bull market, time to get a lot more of your money in cash. And if people had listened to that, they would have lost on some significant gains.
It's just a sign of the times, Cisco. I call it, in our market letter, the first smartphone correction, where everyone was just so negative. Had you put on some of the other media, not the Noon Business Hour, of course.
Of course not.
Just an amazing collection of negative stories, all this popping up on people's brokerage feeds that they see on their smartphone, everyone in index funds. That's where it created this this collapse of the market that really wasn't real. So thankfully, all is really forgotten, and investors are back to what's normal. And, of course, the shift in the Fed and good interest rates, housing market doing better, oil up, China coming back, it's all put together in this picture of rising markets and new records.
If people go out today to buy stocks because they've lost some share, is that a good thing to do, to run out today, or do you sit for a little while and see what's happening?
Well, in my experience of doing this for a long, long time, Chris, you know, when the market is rising, typically sentiment is improving. So, yeah, it would have been great to buy it when things were so tough. But, you know, earnings are good versus interest rates. So over a long period of time, which is what you should be considering mentally when you're making investments, you're probably going to do just as well buying today as if you would have done over time a month ago, or even if you're waiting for a correction or anything. Generally, the best approach is to invest in something that's solid, that has some good earnings, regardless of where the market is on any particular day.
You have Coca-Cola doing well. Let's talk about their earnings. They're doing well, but it's not necessarily by selling Coke. It's a lot of these non-sugary drinks.
Yeah, they finally made a good shift. Coca-Cola has been a lagging stock for the longest time, but at a certain point, that big dividend has really made a difference. So it was a question of, can they gain some top-line momentum? And they really did. Sales up 7%, for instance, in Asia Pacific. So, you know, you've heard the ads, Orange Coke and all the still waters that they're selling. It's finally improved. And, you know, a big company like this with a big dividend, huge profitability, slumbering for years, but then all of a sudden banging out a big top line number, that could create a lot of momentum for a stock like this. And hey, here's a stock that could be in your portfolio right here today at all-time highs, but 48, you know, it's not necessarily that expensive and pays a big dividend. So here's a stock investors might consider no matter where the market is.
Well, thanks for the information. Always nice to have you on the program. Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital here in Chicago. Up next, Travel Tuesday, a basic yet valuable education in travel award points.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Hamilton County Tourism. And this afternoon, we're focusing on reward points, how they work, how to get the most from them. We're joined by Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com, based in New York. Ted, I want to begin by asking you about the, you have all these different rewards cards for different airlines, hotels, etc. Is it best to go with one particular airline, or maybe a more general card that you can use on any airline?
I like keeping your options open. Transferable points cards like those from Chase and American Express are really great options because they give you diversification. So if one particular airline or hotel chain devalues its points or changes its policies or maybe just doesn't have any good options for where you want to go, then you have lots of other options to choose from.
So how do they do that? Is it, you redeem the points like same as cash sort of thing? Or how is it that you can take points from one credit card and use it on a whole bunch of different airlines?
You often get your best bang from transferring directly to a partner. So, for example, Chase has a bunch of partners. You can transfer directly to Southwest Airlines, for example, or United. And then you just transfer your Chase points. They become United miles, and then you book through them. That's usually where you get the best value. You could potentially book travel through, say, the Chase portal. And if you have their Sapphire Reserve card, you'll get 1.5 cents per point. So that could be a good option. But if you play your cards right, by transferring directly to an airline, you might be able to get 2, 3, 4, even more cents per mile.
What are some of the mistakes that we make?
I think there's a mistake in putting too many eggs in one basket, and I think there's also a mistake in hoarding points. I was talking to somebody earlier who was telling me that they know somebody who has this goal of accumulating 10 million points, and I said, well, that's actually not a good idea because these things tend to lose value over time. What you want to do is redeem them whenever you can get a good value. So don't put a huge stockpile together. Maybe start with a goal in mind. Maybe you want to go on a big trip this summer or sometime next year. Work towards that, but don't accumulate them just for the sake of accumulating them.
If you are doing travel rewards and if you're experimenting with all of that, how much money can you save?
You could save hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars. The best value is going to be on international first class. I've heard of people who've gotten, let's say, an $8,000 airline ticket, first class to Asia or Australia for free. You can sometimes do that for as little as 100,000, maybe 110,000 points. And when you factor in that there are a lot of credit card sign-up bonuses in that 50,000 plus range, you'd actually be surprised how close you can get to a valuable reward with just one single credit card sign-on bonus.
Yeah, may not take you very long to get there, that's for sure. Ted Rossman, thanks for being back on the show. Ted is an industry analyst at creditcards.com, joining us on Travel Tuesday. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday, and still to come, the increasing use of cameras in cars.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Drivers are increasingly under scrutiny from interior-mounted cameras. Let's get a check on the latest in car tech with Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter in Detroit. Jeff, thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. So who are the drivers and why the scrutiny?
Yeah, well, you know, we got a couple of things being developed. I mean, there are a number of cameras, and we're going to see a lot of them in vehicles. There are some that are just infrared cameras, things like that, to watch you, make sure you've got your eyes on the road. That's what GM has in their Super Cruise, which is limited self-driving. There are others that, you know, look for your mood, see if you're dozing off, see if you're falling asleep. Now these things don't interfere with your privacy. But as automated vehicles come about and robotic taxis come about, you know, when there's no driver in a taxi or something like that, how do you know what the passengers are doing? So those cameras are likely to record a passenger's every move.
Anything like this on the road yet?
Only in the Cadillac CT6 with Super Cruise. And this one actually looks directly at your eyes and tries to make sure that your eyes are on the road, because this is a limited hands-free self-driving system and they want to make sure you're paying attention. So that's kind of the leading edge on this. Next, we'll see systems that determine if you're tired, determine if you're dozing off, maybe give you a little buzz to wake you up if they see you nodding off, things of that nature.
Is there a way that these cameras could be collecting data that then the companies could sell? You know, it could be profitable for them in that way.
Yeah, I would imagine that they would have to ask customers to opt in a situation like this. Of course, companies always want to collect data, and in many cases, companies have asked car makers, the car makers have asked customers to opt into data collection and maybe given them something in return, like a discount on the vehicle or a discount on some sort of product. But in everyday use, they're likely not going to collect that data, but, you know, it's always possible.
And it could be that they would give you maybe, I'm thinking car insurers, maybe give you a discount if you agree to do it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's been a discussion about this because this is still very early on. I mean, as a customer, there are some people who are very concerned about their privacy, and the thought is this is not going to be an opt-out thing. It's going to be an opt-in thing where somebody will get something in return, because there are other people who may not care as much about privacy, may not care how their data is being used, but boy, if they can get a discount on their vehicle or their insurance, they're all in.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS auto reporter in Detroit. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, the replay podcast will be available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.